This is Ben Plotinsky, the managing editor of City Journal. I'm here with Howard Husak, who's the vice president for policy research at the Manhattan Institute, a contributing editor at City Journal, and the author most recently of an article called Slums of Hope in the current issue of City Journal. Howard, welcome.
Thanks, Ben.
Writing a story called Slums of Hope seems particularly appropriate now, with a movie called Slumdog Millionaire nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars. Now, I'm told that this is a feel-good story about slums in the third world. Can you explain that?
Well, just the idea of there being a feel-good story about slums almost sounds like an oxymoron. But that's what the film is, and it's reflective, I argue in this article, of a real change in the attitude toward low-income housing areas, to wit, slums. First of all, Slumdog Millionaire, for those of you who haven't seen it, go see it. It's not a nomination for Best Picture that is undeserved. But the thing that struck me most about it was the role for its best supporting character, arguably, the slum itself outside of Mumbai, which rather than being portrayed as bleak, even though it's horrible physically in the portrayal, the spirit of its residents, the resilience of its residents, particularly of the hero, is really a key part of the film. This is a real difference from the way in which slums have historically been portrayed in literature.
Can you tell us a little about how slums have been well portrayed, not just in literature in this country, but in social policy? There's a particular approach called environmental determinism in the story that I found interesting.
Right. And the idea that resilient, upwardly mobile, heroic people triumphing over their adversity and even learning from that environment and applying the lessons in effective ways is extremely different from the idea which began in the United States with the writings here in New York of Jacob Riis, that slum life would deform people in some profound and permanent way. Rather than seeing slums as a tough place to start, but a place that you could rise from, Riis and his successors, who implemented policy in the United States and other countries, saw informal or housing in difficult circumstances as an environment that would change and hurt the character of people. Whereas in Slumdog, the hero who answers the questions of a TV quiz show correctly does so because of what he learned in the slum. And so the lesson is completely different from the environmental deterministic view of slum life.
Now, how does this optimistic view of slum life translate into policymaking? It's one thing to say that a slum can be a place where people learn and grow, but what have people actually been doing to put that belief into practice?
Well, it's important, I think, for people in developed countries to understand that when we talk about slums, they are not part of the distant past. It's not like social problems of progressive era, Upton Sinclair or something like that, that were bad then, but they're not bad anymore. Slums are worse today than they were 100 years ago, except they're in places that a lot of Americans don't ever visit. Johannesburg, Mumbai, Sao Paulo. They're extensive tracts of informal housing. They're not even as good as the tenements of the Lower East Side of New York of 100 or 120 years ago. The key why the United Nations, which termed the phrase slums of hope, the reason that it's even plausible is because we're seeing a quite different kind of intervention in these places. Rather than saying, we just got to knock all these down and build high-rise public housing because that's going to be a lot better. Well, we made that mistake. And there are signs that we've learned from our mistakes, that what we need to do is erect really good public baths so people don't have to live in unsanitary conditions. And the World Bank has given franchises to people to have private concessions of public toilets in these tracts in Mumbai. Well, that's an incremental improvement. It doesn't get rid of the slums, but it makes life better. Clean water, effective sewage, sanitation, these are the kind of interventions we're seeing from the international aid organizations like the World Bank that are different than saying, let's just knock these down, because there are huge, powerful trends that are drawing people into urbanized life. And unless we find ways to make the best of that, then they could easily become slums of despair.
Well, not to end on a gloomy note, but tell us just a little more about the mistakes that were made in a previous generation, the knocking down the slums approach and replacing them with things. How did that work and what was the result?
The key thing is to understand the mistake. The mistake was that a failure to appreciate the vibrance, the entrepreneurialism, the extensive small business formation that was true of the slums of the Lower East Side, just as the Finmark Trust, an outstanding non-governmental organization that studies slums in South Africa, has found hundreds of thousands of small businesses in the slums of Johannesburg and Cape Town today. There was a failure to appreciate the richness and positive elements of slum life, and that would lead you to say, let's just put people in nice apartments and we'll knock them down. The failure there was also not to understand that if people don't create the wealth and work into better housing, well, then it doesn't really matter much to them. And we saw the degradation that public housing estates have brought out all over the developed world. So we need to stay away from that.
Well, thanks very much, Howard. There's much more to the story, and we hope you'll take a look at City Journal's website, www.city-journal.org, where you can read The Slums of Hope. Thanks very much, Howard.
Thank you, Ben.